Hello, thanks for listening. All the music featured in the BBC series Top of the Pops Playback and the Radio Luxembourg years has been faded out for podcast copyright reasons. However, the full versions of these programmes can be found on the Sean Tilley Archive Mixcloud channel. Hello, I'm Sean Tilley and this is Top of the Pops Playback. Now, during the next hour, we'll be remembering a vintage edition of the world's most famous chart show with the help of two of the stars who appeared in that programme, and we'll be playing some of the big hit songs that featured in it, which at that time were Top of the Pops. Oh, judging by this piece of music, we have an appointment with the 1980s. And this time around, we are whizzing back to the 12th of August 1982 and appearing on this edition of Top of the Pops, but we can't say where at the moment. They were very high up the chart. We can say that much at least for now. It's Kevin and Big Jim from Dexys Midnight Runners. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
The record was Come and Eileen. We'll get around to it very soon. Firstly, though, on this edition of the show, new entry at number 34, Toto Coelho and I Eat Cannibals. Pops Playback, it's the 12th of August 1982, all over again, with Kevin and Big Jim from Dexys Midnight Runners having a listen to that record, Toto Coelho. New entry at number 34, I Eat Cannibals, a song that you do remember, Jim?
I do remember, with fond memories, yes.
Yeah, not a bad record. They released a follow-up called Dracula's Tango, but it wasn't a hit, and we never heard from the girls again.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, right.
No, okay. I mean, I'd like to see them girls. How did they get on? What happened afterwards? You know, I'd like to know the story of them.
Barry Blue was the producer, big star in the 70s, dancing on a Saturday night and all that. You were saying, Kevin, that it was a toss-up for you between Barry White and Barry Blue.
Like Barry White, Barry Blue.
Let's go all the way back to the forming of the band, yep. 1978.
We formed in 78, yeah.
And before that, you'd been in Lucy and the Lovers for a while, and then sort of a little flirtation with the punk movement in the Killjoys, but you did release a single with the Killjoys.
We did. We released a single, Johnny Won't Get You Heaven.
Yeah, and you haven't listened to it since 1977.
Not long after that, if I did listen to it. No, I haven't listened to it in a very long time.
Jim, you were classically trained as a trombonist.
Yeah.
And you got together with the band in 1978. But, you know, you had an appreciation for pop music, and that you at least had that in common, you two.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to listen to the radio, and it was all the pop music I listened to. Yeah, you know, and soul music, whatever was on the radio at the time, really. You know, it wasn't Radio 1 then, was it? Was it the Light Wave or something?
Light Programme.
Yeah.
So, although by that stage it was probably a Radio 1 around, a Radio Luxembourg
and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest about it, Kevin. In those early days of Dexys, there was this big thing about, you know, soul music being the inspiration and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, looking back, I mean, you just said when we were listening to that record there that you wish you hadn't said that in a way.
I do, because I think it kind of limited us in a way. Oh, right, Dexys is just a soul band. I mean, not just in a negative way, but it kind of limited it, as if to say you can't go anywhere else from there. But we were soul. And I think all good music has got soul in it, really. But we were lots of other things, pop, really. You know, we never had a problem about trying to be commercial or not commercial. We always liked good melodies. You know, we liked to write tunes that were good.
Mm. I mean, you had this terrific vocal style, which we'd never heard before. And that was quite on purpose, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was suggested to me quite early on that I needed to get, by a fellow called Bernard Rhodes, he used to manage the Clash, involved with Dexys for a few months in 1979. He said to me, look, all good singers have a vocal style that's different and unique. So you need to work on that. And I went away and worked on it with Jim, really. Thought about putting a cry in my voice. And like General Johnson, Chairman of the Board, and that's what we did.
Fantastic band. I love Chairman of the Board, actually. Yeah, Everything's Tuesday was my favourite.
Oh, you know what? That's mine. If I DJ, I often play that one.
Yeah, it's a fantastic record. End of 1979, you go in the studio and you record this first single of yours that makes the top 40.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about, obviously, your first Top of the Pops in just a sec as well, after the second song in on this edition from the 12th of August 1982. Number three on the chart were Yazoo, and this is Don't Go. Yeah. Yes, from the BBC. It's Top of the Pops playback, and we're remembering the edition from the 12th of August 1982, featuring Dexys Midnight Runners with the Emerald Express and Kevin Rowland, and also Big Jim Patterson from the band. Join me right now to listen to that, their second top 10 single. Vince Clarke and Alison Alf Moyet, once again, just like Only You from their album Upstairs at Eric's, number 3 on the chart. Don't go from Yazoo, Kevin.
I think when I saw Yazoo there, like, they were in, they were coming in, we were going out, it was that kind of thing. You just sort of nodded to them. It was that kind of thing, really. And I remember just thinking, like, blimey, this programme is about promoting, you know, everybody's sort of here to promote. But to me, actually, it was more than that, Top of the Pops. I absolutely loved it. It was, like, really special. I mean, I'd watched it all of my life, and it was an absolute dream to get on Top of the Pops. I mean, I just had that thing. It was an ambition to get on Top of the Pops. I just thought, I really want to get on top. If I get on Top of the Pops, you know, everything will be all right. That's what I thought. And the first day we got there, for the first single for Dance Dance, I was like, looking up and just thinking, my God, this is it. This is where it happens. This is where Roxy Music were. This is where Slade were. This is where whoever was, you know.
It was amazing, it was the 17th of January, 1980.
Yeah, 17th of January, 1980.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was a record that got a lot of play on the radio. I remember that very well. In actual fact, I mentioned earlier on to you, Jim, Radio Luxembourg. That was the first time I ever heard the record. I think I heard it on Luxy before I heard it on the BBC.
Yeah.
I think it was Stuart Henry who played it.
Probably.
Yeah, on a programme called Street Heat or something like that. And within no time whatsoever, in Sounds, it was voted Single of the Week. And it did make the top 40. It came in at number 40,
number
didn't
40.
It?
And then they said, you're going to get Top of the Pops. And we were like, I think we might have even got Top of the Pops before it was number 40.
Yeah, you did, actually.
I think
it
was. Like,
it was number 60.
There you go.
Yeah,
I
we
know.
Do our research on
you
this
know,
show.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You got on your numbers. And we had to go down and record the track the night before.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we did that, and then we did a little run through. We said, all right, well, look, we've got the music now. I'm going to look on it. And we decided to sort of run through the way we danced and the way we put ourselves over, you know. And it was all going so well. And then we did the rehearsals, and that was going well. And everybody was like, yeah, okay. And I went and got a jacket that day, I think at Kensington Market. And all right, how's that look? Yeah, that looks good. Right, okay. Simon
Bates was presenting.
Simon Bates
was
presenting.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
See?
You can remember.
See?
Yeah.
And then he said, right, come over. I'm going to introduce you to some people from Birmingham. I was like, okay. So we went over there. And he leaned aside. And then it was like, Dexys, Dance Dance. And we started it, and I was like, okay, it's going all right. I did the intro, and I was doing this sort of swimming dance that I was doing. And then it was like, then the first few lines, I'll only ask you once more, you only want to believe. And then I had the thought, 10 million people watching. And I was just like, oh my God, 10 million people watching me. And my sister told me afterwards, because like that day we recorded it on the Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we watched it on the Thursday. Went out to my mum's dad's in Harrow, stayed over in London, watched it. And my sister, and she said, I could tell you were nervous. I went, why? It's because your jaw goes tight when you're nervous. My jaw's like that.
Only your sister can know that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Fantastic. I mean, the next time you appeared on the show, though, it's for very different reasons. I'm going to be asking you about that after this record, which was climbing up to number 21 on the chart. It got to number 4 in the end. Bit of Euro disco, Euro pop, as they used to call it, the Boys Town Gang. And this is their version of Can't Take My Eyes Off You. You're listening to Top of the Pops playback with me, Sean Tilley, and during this edition, we are rewinding to the 12th of August 1982 with Kevin Rowland and Big Jim Patterson from Dexys Midnight Runners, who are appearing on this edition of The Pops, alongside the Emerald Express doing Come On Eileen. Not yet, it's going to be coming up in a while. That's the Boys Town Gang climbing up to number 21 on the BBC charts, and their rendition of Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. The brainchild of San Francisco-based DJ Bill Motley. You'll have an appreciation for that, Kevin.
Bill, I don't know Motley. I knew his band, Motley Crue. I didn't know Bill.
But, you know, the DJ in you, perhaps, you know, and also a huge hit in Holland there, getting to number one over there.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah, no doubt you preferred the Andy Williams version, though.
About the Frankie Valli version?
Yeah, actually, the Frankie Valli version was the best. You're quite right. Valli
Mind
the
you,
Four
I
Seasons.
Must admit, Andy Williams' version is pretty lovely.
Very, very classy. Yeah.
What a class song. Mm. I mean, what a song. To write a song like that, wow.
Next time in 1980 that you appeared on Top of the Pops,
It was a certain record that that got to number one. Obviously, it wasn't number one the first time you performed it, but no. We're talking about Gino. But tell me when you guys rocked up at Top of the Pops, when all of a sudden you were number one in the chart. Were you treated behind the scenes any differently for having the number one record than you were as a new band?
We were. Is that good? You probably don't want me to say that.
What way?
I tell you for why. Because we'd had this idea. We loved Top of the Pops. You know what I mean? We loved it. Like I said. And we had this idea that we wanted to... We used to wear, like, New York Docker regalia, you know, and had some carry bags. And we said, could you, on one of the Top of the Pops, I think when it was in the 12 or 13, we said, can you film us walking into the studio over the intro of the song? Maybe did we have a couple of guys on the stage? I can't remember. Some of us walking in with the bags into the studio, and then we throw the bags down and we go on the stage. Can you do that? And they were like, about that. And then when we got to number one, they went, all right, you can do it this week. And it didn't quite work, but it was
Bad. That's a brave decision to do, though, isn't it? Because I wouldn't imagine there were many people turning up at Top of the Pops who were making such demands.
We weren't making demands. It was a request.
Yeah.
It was a request.
Yeah, fair dues. Yeah. I mean, what do you remember about getting the number one record? You know, the news coming through, the charts used to get announced on a Tuesday lunchtime in those days.
People told us that we wouldn't get to number one. That's what we were told, because is it Paul McCartney?
I think you prevented Paul McCartney from getting it. He was number two on the chart with Coming Up. Yeah.
Hadn't he been number one?
He hadn't been at number one, no.
No. Right, so we prevented him. Sorry, Paul. hey, lads. I remember my mum said after it got knocked off by Johnny Rogan.
Eurovision.
She said, well, at least it's Johnny Rogan. He's Irish. So anyway, at least it was him who got knocked off by.
I mean, it's well documented, of course, that the inspiration behind the record was Gino Washington. But what I suppose was even more impressive was the fact that Gino had been... he'd almost been like retired for a couple of years, and it was the inspiration to get him back out on the road.
Yeah, I suppose he just cashed in a bit, really. I mean, why not? You know, he's a great singer, and I'm sure he didn't want to give up.
Yeah.
Good luck to him.
And of course, the irony was that you had somebody in the band who used to play with Gino, didn't you? JB,
Jeff Blythe. So that was interesting. We said, "Oh, you can play with Gino," and he started to tell us the stories about it. You know, that was interesting.
Next on this edition of Top of the Pops, to be honest, Kevin, you don't remember this guy being in the studio, and I guess you know it's a shame in a way because he was such a unique character in the music biz. It was Billy McKenzie alongside Alan Rankin, the Associates.
I thought they were really good.
They were, and you know, again, talk about a great sort of white soulful voice.
Brilliant.
One of the very best.
Yeah. I mean, he hit those notes, didn't he?
Yeah.
If I don't remember, you know what it was in them days. How it was is we used to everybody. I mean, us and a lot of other bands. Believe it or not, it's not like it is now. We wouldn't sort of talk to each other. It was that sort of aftermath of punk and all that, and the New Romantic. And you know, it was like, oh, you're in that tribe. We're in this tribe. We ain't speaking to you.
Yeah.
That's how things were in them days.
Sad, actually.
Yeah.
It is a bit, isn't
silly.
It? Because obviously Billy no longer around,
talk to him.
Yeah, fantastic records. Now, the interesting thing about this one was it was a double A side. On one side, it was a version of Diana Ross's Love Hangover. Yeah. But the song that they were performing on this Top of the Pops was 18 Carat Love Affair, and it was climbing to number 25. Back the 12th of August 1982, and at number 25 on the chart, The Associates at 18 Carat Love Affair. And you're quite surprised by me saying that Love Hangover was on the was on the double A.
I forgot that Love Hangover was like 1974, isn't it? I think with Diana Ross. I was thinking of something else.
76, I think, wasn't it? The summer of 76. But it doesn't matter. All those years just blend into one, Kevin. How are you supposed to remember?
Well, you do.
Well, yeah, but it's my job too, isn't it? And it's very easy when you've got the research in front of you, anyway.
Oh, I see.
But that was their third top 40 hit of 1982. Now, right about the time that Gino was at number one, you had a couple of lineup changes. Quite strange when a band are topping the chart. You had the two Andys coming in, and the other Andy was departing, Andy Leake. He left quite quickly. The reason being touted around at the time was that he didn't like the fame side of the business.
I don't think he quite got it, you know. He didn't quite understand what we were all about, really. I think that was his biggest problem. I don't quite understand that about you know, pop stardom or whatever. I think you've just got to accept whatever comes your way, really. You know.
Was that your attitude as far as you two were concerned? You were quite happy to deal with all that once, you know, the success started coming in?
Well, it's not as easy as that, you know.
I don't know if Andy would say today that that's why he left, actually. I think he told me that afterwards he was having some other... He was having some difficulties within the band that I didn't even know about. He said, told me that later on, and I think he just, you know, he might have done an interview and that's where that's what came out. You never know, but, you know. He was only in the band 4 months. He joined at the end of December, and I think he left in the beginning of May.
Unbelievable timing, really, because you had this top 10 album by now as well, Searching for the Young Soul Rebels. And that must have brought, did it not, a pressure, because all of a sudden you were arguably the biggest band in the country, Kevin.
I don't know. I must admit, for me, then the whole promotional schedule and the touring schedule did start to get on top of us, really. You know, it was like we were in a bus, a minibus, weren't we?
It was pretty horrendous.
Yeah. Just going up and down the motorways, and they seem to be, whoever picked them, just seem to have been putting a pin in the map. Aberdeen tonight, Brighton tomorrow, Newcastle the next day, that. And we were just spent a lot of time in a van, really. But it was all right. You know?
And it was the time, Kevin, where obviously you had this sort of press embargo going on as well, didn't you? When you weren't talking to the press, taking out ads, you know, promoting what the band were doing. From the perspective of another member of the band, Jim, what were your feelings? I mean, were you right behind him with that, or did you think that possibly?
No, I was 100% behind him, yeah. I mean, that was not the sort of thing that I was getting myself involved in so much, you know.
Yeah.
I was perfectly happy just to play the trombone and party, you know. So a lot of the decisions, the political decisions, I suppose, were, you know, I trusted Kevin 100%.
But it did create this mystique around you, this aura, almost, you know. Which
is that
sort
right?
Of,
yeah,
from a fan's point of view, which I was, you know. I was heavily into your music at this time, and I suppose at an age where I was really impressed by that sort of thing as well, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of made things hard for ourselves, really. I don't know why we did, but we just did, you know.
Well, it could have been worse. It could have been like The Clash and not done Top of the Pops at all, you know.
We never would have done that. Yeah. Not Top of the Pops.
When There, Them Idea came out, which third single from
that
album.
Was a shame.
No Top of the Pops.
No,
because you had the Musicians Union strike, which, you know, took the show off for 9 weeks.
Right, and it affected us.
Do you reckon so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it affected us.
Because it got to number 7.
Yeah.
But you think it could have well,
I don't
you know, possibly
that would
have been
good. I think, we've done Top of the Pops. I think it was all disco records. I think we're doing better than.
Yeah. Feels Like I'm in Love, Kelly Marie, and Lip Sync, Funky Town, all these sort of records. Yeah,
because no Top of the Pops.
Yeah, Sheena Easton was next on the program. Of course, went off to the States to become this enormous star at the cost of her chart career in this country. I think this record was at number 38, and this is Machinery. Eastern and Machinery, number 38 on the chart, the 12th of August 1982, on our Top of the Pops playback with Kevin and Jim from Dexy's Midnight Runners. Sheena Easton was fresh from winning a Grammy Award for Best New Artist.
Was she? Right there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Around about that time.
Oh,
and of course, it wasn't that long afterwards when you guys were doing pretty well in the States as well, but we'll get around to that in just a sec. One of the singles that did come out, I mean, it was the spring of 1981. We talked about it while one of the records was playing earlier on, Jim and myself, Plan B.
Oh, yeah.
Now, my memories of that record when it got released was there were some problems with the record company, weren't there? EMI. Was it true that you never wanted that single to get released?
We wanted it to be released, but we didn't want it released on EMI.
Right,
because
okay.
We were actually out of contract. They hadn't picked up the option. And the next thing, they put the single out. So we wanted to move on because the guy who signed us to EMI had changed, had gone, and the whole thing had changed at EMI, and it wasn't like it was. So we wanted, and we found out they hadn't picked up the option, so we were actually free to go.
Mm.
So we left. After
and that was when you went to, what, Mercury, wasn't it?
Mercury,
Yeah. I loved Plan B as well because on the B-side, it had a terrific version of the Bar K, Soulfinger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you would get bands that would put instrumentals of the single on the B-side, but it was never the case with you. Seemed to give it a lot more thought than that.
I mean, like, the way we looked at it, we were glad to be there. Do you know what I mean? We were grateful that, you know, we could have ended up doing anything, but we were in a band and we were on Top of the Pops. Do you know what I mean? And, like, we weren't going to blow that. We didn't want to... We wanted to respect that and respect our audience. You know, people go to a record shop to buy our records. I still couldn't get over that. I mean, we used to do gigs. I remember that around that time in 81, Jim. Mm. And I would often just, you know... they'd be in the audience. We did the Dominion. I remember, you know, before we did that Dominion, me and you were chatting, and we were like, "Oh, yeah, we've got to do this well. Can we do this well?" I remember just like looking out, peeping out through the curtains, and watching them coming in, and sitting down in their seats, and thinking, "Man, they've paid whatever it is to come and see us." You know. So we wanted to do, we didn't want to disappoint them, like, you know.
Here's a very, very unusual record from the pairing of Kate Garner and Jeremy Healy, who was to go off and become a massively successful DJ in later years. The first and most successful of two Top 40 singles for Hazy Fantasy. They were rising to number 22 on the BBC chart with John Wayne as Big Leggy. I'm Sean Tilley, and it's Top of the Pops Playback, in which we showcase a classic edition of the world's most famous chart show. And on this occasion, it's memories of the 12th of August 1982, when John Peel was hosting and Kevin Rowland and Big Jim Patterson from Dexys Midnight Runners were performing. Not yet, though. That was Hazy Fantasy, Upwardly Mobile 2, number 22 on the BBC chart, with John Wayne is Big Leggy. So this is the era of TOTP, when we're talking all of a sudden more and more professional dancers muscling into the action. It was also the era of party whistles.
Were they getting into that by then?
They were, yeah. Whereas, of course, when you'd first done the show, and even when you'd done it with Gino, it was still very much being made in the way that it was in the 70s. Mm. But, you know, you would have seen a change, I guess, by this stage.
Oh, the party hats and whistles were a bit much, I think.
Yeah.
It kind of took the edge off it for me.
And there seemed to be this, you know, sort of forever running noise of the crowd and the whistles, even through the records.
Right, they started doing that then.
Yeah.
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 They really spoiled it. Sorry, they did spoil it.
I mean, I don't know why they did it, because 1980, it had the best format.
Mm.
You know, or if they'd have stuck, it was getting 10 to 15 million. They were complaining that it was only getting 10 million viewers, that it had fallen from 15.
Casualty of its own success, yeah.
Well, they were saying that, but 10 million was considered bad news.
As we get towards the end of 1981, you start premiering tracks from what was to be the next album. It was still 8 months away, To Rye. But, I mean, there was obviously a change in direction, and this is, I guess, when the fiddle started creeping into the records for the first time.
Yeah. We brought them in, I think. The first record was Liars 80E, which wasn't a hit in late 81. And then Celtic Soul Brothers, Spring of 82, and then Come On Eileen, 83. Spring on Eileen, Summer 82.
I mean, Celtic Soul Brothers eventually was a hit single the following spring.
Kind of.
You know, which is a slightly different version, obviously, to the one that had been out a year before. We can't talk about Come On Eileen yet, because we've got to get around to that in a set. What we can talk about is the follow-up. Jackie Wilson said, "I'm in heaven when I see you smile." And this saw you sort of kind of, not you, Jim, obviously.
No, I don't.
But you did at least
but
play
you
on
it. Played on it.
I played on it.
Yeah. But this studio performance, right? I mean, it's etched in Top of the Pops history.
Yeah.
Because there you are, opening up the show on the 30th of September 1982.
Yeah.
And it's Jackie Wilson said, and in the background we've got a picture of Jockey Wilson, the Scottish dance player.
Yeah. We asked for the picture to be on.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right, because you have to understand that that is not well documented.
I know.
Right? It is put down as a BBC cock-up.
Of course it was.
You quite honestly are telling me right now that you asked for that picture to be up.
Of course. And if I hadn't have asked for it, how would I walk on the stage with 10 of us and not one of us notice a great big picture of a dance player?
But you've got to understand how I'm saying it like that, because, you know, that's not well known, Kevin.
Well, that's the truth. What happened was we used to call the song Jockey Wilson for a laugh in rehearsals. Right. And we'd often give our songs pet names, you know. Celtic Soul Brothers was the Septic Soul Brothers, blah, blah, blah. Gino we called Beano. Anyway, and Jackie Wilson we called Jockey Wilson. And we would rehearse, so should we do Jockey Wilson? And that kind of thing. And then I was getting a little bit tired of the treadmill promotion. I mean, I still liked it in Top of the Pops, but I thought, you know what? Just have a laugh. And I was looking for ways to kind of amuse myself. And when we got to the Top of the Pops, I said to the producer, any chance of putting a picture of Jockey Wilson up? He said, well, everyone will think we've made a mistake, won't they? I said, well, only idiots, really. Only people who
like me
get the joke. That's what, well, and he said, all right. And he did it.
That was the edition that celebrated Radio 1's 15th birthday. A couple of the DJs who've done this series, right, that were there on the floor that Wednesday evening when you recorded it, have said to me, we had a word with one of the guys on the floor and said, you got a picture of Jockey Wilson, the dance player, up there. And he said, it's all right. We TV. We know what we're doing now. Right? So that explains it now.
Oh.
That explains it now. Thank you very much, Kevin Rowland, for clearing that up.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Of course we did.
Well, you have cleared up one of the great Top of the Pops mysteries, being no doubt about that. Here's the Fun Boy 3 at number 26. Top of the Pops playback rewinds to the 12th of August 1982, and we've been sharing the memories with Kevin Rowland and Big Jim Patterson from Dexy's Midnight Runners. We're about to play their record, so no surprises as to where it features in the chart. That was up to number 26, an updated version of the George Gershwin standard Summertime, as performed by the Fun Boy 3, Terry Hall, Neville Staples and Linville Golding. Ex-specials, of course. Did you like all those specials records that were out in the early 80s?
Yeah, I like them early specials. They were very good.
Yeah, you kind of got roped into that for a while, didn't you? Even though, you know, Two Tone was one thing, you were doing another. But I think probably because of the fact that you were wearing the DMs and everything.
We weren't wearing DMs.
You got that skinhead following for a while. I know, because I was one of them. Still am.
Still are, yeah. Harrington and everything.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You
ain't
changed.
Yeah, I ain't changed at all. I admit, I've not even changed these clothes. No. It's awful, is that? I've been walking around in these for the last 30 years.
Well, looking good on it, mate.
Come on, Eileen. Did you think for 1 minute when this record came out that it was going to be as huge as it turned out to be?
I didn't, because, I mean, the record company didn't actually even want to release it initially. They wanted to release Jackie Wilson first. And it was only the plugger, Brad Mazzell, great guy, who settled the argument. I wanted Eileen, and Roger Ames, who was running the record company, wanted Jackie Wilson as the single. And we were, the last single had bombed, so we were losing credibility at the label. And he went, right, we'll let Brad decide. Brad, come down. And he played him Jackie Wilson first. No, he played him Eileen first. And I wasn't happy about that. I thought, oh, he's going to play Jackie Wilson second, so that'll make that sound better. And then he went, at the end of it, he went, Brad, what do you think? And Brad went, play that first one again. And played Eileen that one.
Well, it had an anthemic quality about it, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And I remember when the record first came out, I started playing it at gigs, and there was just something about this record.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, maybe we had more of an idea working in the industry that it was going to be a monster.
It wasn't getting loads of plays to begin with.
Not initially.
No, not initially.
But then all of a sudden it came in very low in the chart, didn't it? Yeah. But there was 1 week where it had an almighty climb up into the sort of lower regions of the top 10. Getting to number one in America, what sort of feeling was that like for you? I mean, because no doubt it meant, and I remember you having to go over and sort of do a certain amount of promoting the record as well. How did you find that experience?
What, promoting it or getting to the...
Well, the whole American experience.
I mean, I was pleased to be going over there. I was happy. I mean, you know, it's going to America. I'm getting on a plane and they're paying for it, and then going to a lovely hotel and give me food and everything. I mean, I didn't enjoy sort of sitting down and doing 12 interviews one after the other, which did happen, even one on your breakfast. Are you okay to do one over your breakfast, Kevin? And then we're going to meet, you know, and then you do them all day, and then we're going to meet Rob from so-and-so. You know, and I know that these guys are all doing their job, and I need to do this stuff, but I must admit, I used to just get more and more, you know, drained.
Well, I mean, there are that many more radio stations, obviously, and the fact that you get a number one record over there.
You've got to do them. But, you know, it's a part of the job. It's a part of the job.
Yeah.
You've got to get on with it.
It was the whole MTV age as well, wasn't it?
It was starting, and it was all right, really. And then, you know, when it got to number one, I think I was a bit knackered, really. I was just like, couldn't really take it in, you know.
Yeah.
We weren't there at the time. We were in Belgium or somewhere.
And it was Best British Single. It was the British Rock and Pop Awards then, probably, wasn't it? Although they call it the Brits now. Best-selling single of 1982.
Yeah.
Just an incredible time. Listen, guys, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate the looking back. Before we have a listen to Come On Eileen, it's a complete top 10 rundown for the 12th of August 1982. And with that, say, Kevin and Jim from Dexys, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bananarama's Shy Boy was falling to number 10, but a big jump up to number 9 for Bad Manners with My Girl Lollipop. Strange Little Girl for the Stranglers nudging up to number 8, and advancing at 7, Kid Creole and the Coconuts with Stool Pigeon. Eye of the Tiger, the theme from Rocky 3 by Survivor, was number 6, but heading for number 1. Stalling at 5, Hot Chocolate, It Started With a Kiss. No Change at 4 for Madness, Driving in My Car. Freezing at number 3, Yazoo and Don't Go. And holding at 2, the ex number 1, Irene Cara with Fame, which means still on top of the chart, Dexy's Midnight Runners with the Emerald Express and Come On Eileen.